Do you love the Tabernacle Choir? This year, the choir's music is everywhere you are. Listen to your favorite choir songs and music and the spoken word anytime you want on Alexa by simply enabling the skill.
Alexa, play music in the spoken word.
Now playing music in the spoken word.
You can also download the Tabernacle Choir app, subscribe to the choir on YouTube, listen on Spotify, and have access to all their wonderful music. Happy listening.
Hey, it's Brother One.
And Brother Two.
From Two Brothers Mattress. You'll spend 33% of this year on your mattress. That's almost 3,000 hours. Start sleeping comfortably on a new Serta mattress. Visit one of our five stores or twobrothersmattress.com. With our lowest price guarantee and our 100-night trial, your locally owned Two Brothers Mattress is your number one choice in Serta mattresses. Visit one of our five stores or twobrothersmattress.com. twobrothersmattress.com.
Radio check.
Loud and clear.
KSL Sports and KSL Podcast present Mode Push, an American view of F1, starting now.
And stop. He's Ricky Cut with his Odyssey.
I'm gutted. I'm absolutely gutted.
I enjoyed this so much. Thank you.
Everybody, welcome on in. It's another edition of Mode Push, the American view of F1. It's our little boutique podcast. Dan Jimenez across from me. I'm Alex Curie. Thanks for being with us. I don't want to diminish it in any way. It's not little. That's what my father-in-law says about, like, how's your little radio show going? I'm like, well, I'm only 18 years into this thing. Hopefully I'll make it work one of these days.
Yeah.
That's where we're at. We got to make this little thing go. But, you know, part of it is because we just love the sport. It's become really fun to follow. And we're getting down to the last few races of the year. Interlagos coming up this weekend, so we'll have a preview of that. On top of all of it, Dan, did you buy your Las Vegas Grand Prix tickets? Because, we're getting this close to the rest of America really jumping into F1. We saw the Red Bull, I think there were a couple different cars that were driving through casinos.
Through casinos, yes. Past the blackjack tables.
Past the blackjack tables. And I just thought, that is brilliant. It's amazing.
Great marketing.
It's wild, too, because it's very Vegas. And I was massively disappointed, even being an Amex, an American Express card holder, going, I have early access to this thing, and the tickets are $2,800 a piece or whatever it was. And I thought, oh, shoot, they sold me on that, but there's no freaking way I'm going to buy a $2,800 ticket to an American race here. So how on earth are we going to get – how are we going to watch the Las Vegas Grand Prix, Dan?
Oh,
how are
man.
We going to see this thing?
We are going to have to somehow get, helicopter ride maybe? We could – contract one of those helicopters that does the Grand Canyon tours, and we can just fly over top.
Just circle it.
Yeah, I had sticker shock. I don't know what I was expecting. I guess my baseline was, I paid like $1,000 for the 3-day pass to Singapore. And I was like, I felt like that was probably on the high side. And then it was like twice that for an equivalent seat in the grandstands in Vegas. And I was like, ugh. Like, I know I paid a lot to like fly to Singapore, but I don't know. Vegas... I think that it's going to be complicated the first year. I just think putting on a race in the middle of Las Vegas, like just the logistics of getting people around the track to have like a good race day experience, it's going to take them, I think, a year or two to really figure that out. And so I'm kind of more of the like, let's give it a couple of years and then go.
So Dan, that's come where on. I'm at. I don't want to hear that. Give it a couple of years. I don't know if I have a couple of years, man.
I want to go to Austin. I think I haven't been to Austin yet, and I think watching the last race reminded me that like that produces really good racing, and that like third sector concourse area of like turns 13 through 17, right. You get to see a ton
pretty
of
long,
action
pretty long,
from one place.
Yeah.
I was like, man, if I'm going to spend my money again to go on a race in the States, I'm probably going to pick Austin before Vegas. But
it's my birth city.
Okay.
I thought, but it also looks really boring. Like when you see shots of COTA, aren't you like, it's kind of boring out there. I mean, everything in Texas is flat.
It's just in the middle of flat Texas.
I guess
that's
we could also.
Sure.
Listen, in an era when we build our lives around like food trips,
that's true. Yeah,
it'd be perfect. You go to Salt Lick, you go to Franklin's Barbecue or whatever, and then you go to COTA, and then So maybe that is the best move for us, is next year we hit the but I don't know what ticket prices are like in Austin either. I did see some of the Mexico prices. It's actually really cheap. Well, sorry, let me go back. It's not
relatively
cheap.
Relatively speaking,
to go to Abu Dhabi. I was looking at the last race of the year, and I think there were 3-day passes for $500-600, and I was and again, like I said, that's a lot of money still. But I think if you were to really, I think I'm going to get stuck in the second. I know I'm going to look at least for next year. But you're the one who actually went out and you found some secondary market tickets, right? For the Singapore Grand Prix, because this is one of the most ripped off segments in sports ticketing is F1 races, getting fake tickets, getting ripped off by somebody who's not really a vendor. So they have wisdom on how to do it. So what's the wisdom on actually looking for tickets at a place that's a real third party vendor? Because I just don't feel like I'm going to be able to get even the F1.
Yeah,
you know,
I remember when we looked it up, there were two or three websites that I believe I found listed on like Formula1.com as like approved secondary vendors. And the one we used was GP Tickets. It's out of Austria. And yeah, the process was good. It went totally smooth. So I would just recommend Googling like approved F1 ticket vendors. And I think there was two or three that came up. And we could put them in the show notes. But I think that that's the way to do it. I would be really scared of buying it anywhere else. Cause like you said, like these things on their own looked pretty sketchy when we were buying them, but it worked out.
Apparently they were like real. Yeah. Well, I mean, you think about it and you go, cause I'm not interested actually in Miami. I'm not interested in paying $2,000 to go see an F1 race and that's not the way you get Americans excited about sport either. Mm-hmm. I guess it's on brand with the rest of what F1 is, which is a bunch of rich folks sitting around and competing.
And glamour,
it feels like some motorized polo, you know, or something where it's like we've turned into this thing where it's like the people who are going to pay to watch this thing, we can get them because we know they'll pay that price. Yeah. That's a bummer.
Yeah. One interesting thing I just realized this week is that the race promoter for the Vegas Grand Prix is Liberty Media. And that's the first, like, that's the only one. Everyone else has, like, local country promoters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so
I would just assume if you're the media rights holder, you would be promoting every race as it is. But
yeah, so this one, Liberty Media is going all in on, and it seems like they bought a $250 million parcel of land in the middle of Vegas to build the paddock on. And, like, they're going all in on
Vegas. That is a ton
Vegas.
Of money.
Yeah.
Well, you think about, I mean, they had a Grand Prix in Vegas. It was like in the parking lot at Caesars.
Crappy.
It was garbage. So, you know, obviously they have to change the way things are done, and they're going to have the circuit that they showed, you know, is wild because it's just straight up and down the strip, right? Mm-hmm. And behind the strip. And so it'll be
visually, it's going to be awesome. The drivers will probably be pretty bored. I was thinking, like, how could we make it a more exciting race? Like, maybe like some Mario Kart elements of like the banana peel on the track, but maybe it's like those pamphlets that are always hanging out on the sidewalk, and you just like throw a pile of those in front of Max as he comes through.
Look, like, you know, somebody's holding up the timing boards, and then you have the ladies smacking the cards at these guys. Hey,
yeah,
you want a taxi?
Yeah,
free
maybe
taxi.
Some surprise elements there might improve the racing.
Either way, I want to get excited about F1 coming to America. It just seems like such a steep entry price, you know.
We'll keep an eye on the secondary and see what prices.
We'll keep people updated too, because if we can find something that's a relative deal, then that'd be really good. Maybe we should, you know what we should do? We rope KSL Sports into this thing and we do a giveaway.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we can get some sponsors in on this. We get this whole thing going. We'll do a giveaway.
Yeah. Did you see the you were talking about like the kind of exhibition they did of having the Red Bull go through the middle of the casino,
an actual casino,
and then they had them going up and down the strip, the undercar lights. Did you see that?
Yes, and somebody was even saying they're like, and obviously it's not going to be a thing, but that looked. I mean, night races are freaking cool anyway, right? Where you look at that and you go, that'd be awesome. Why wouldn't they be able to? Would that be totally against regulations if they just for one race go, hey, have that Red Bull be that blue, that bluish purple that's kind of their color.
Yeah, I mean,
that teal AMG, you know, when Mercedes goes by, the bright red underneath a Ferrari, like, freaking A, man. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. From a branding perspective, the teams love it. It'd be great. I think you could definitely pull that off. I mean, they already mandate how many cameras they have to have in the car and stuff. So I think putting a strip of LED lights with a controller on it, like, it'd be cool if it had, like, the brand color, you know, most of the time. But then if they were, you know, deploying hybrid power at, like, flashes or something, like, I think it'd be cool to, like, if it kind of conveyed some amount of information during the race too, to see what the lights were doing.
What does it, I was actually wondering that, because I thought that it was just like, oh, they're braking, that's why the light's blinking there
on the back. Yeah,
yeah. And then when is it that they're recharging? When is it when they're gathering power or whatever it is, when they kind of go,
yeah, so mode? I think it's when they're regenerating that power is when it flashes. Unless it's raining, then everybody's, I think, is always flashing. I believe that's the rule. And I think the reason they do that for safety is when you're regenerating power, you're going to be decelerating at a greater speed. And so I think it's a safety thing for the driver behind to know that, okay, this guy's gathering power going into this corner, so he's probably going to brake a little bit harder than what, you know, he would otherwise. So I think that, like, that light on the back is mostly there for safety. But I think for, right, like, fans, it would be cool if, like, they had underlights on the cars that you knew, like, what the different colors meant. That what the driver's doing to the car or something.
Well, and you know, like, from a visual standpoint, when you see a car, it's hard to depict the speed on television, mm-hmm, especially through, like, those low speed corners. You're going, well, they're going 4.5 miles an hour here, and you're like, no, they never get below 60, and you're like, what? You know,
yeah,
like, mm-hmm, it's insane to see the speeds that these guys keep even through these corners. And so I think that being able to follow a race and kind of understand really how insanely quick these cars are, it would be a lot more fun. Something needs to be added, I think, for the element of like, hey, if they're going to roll this thing out and have a bunch of American, what you're going to have is a bunch of mainstream,
mm-hmm,
American sports fans who are just going to dip in because it's Vegas and because they're like, oh, I've heard a lot about this thing, and Liberty Media is going to be pumping this thing hard on ESPN, et cetera. So I'm just wondering, like, how this thing is going to turn out and what it will actually be for. You know, a place like Vegas and a place like the U.S. going forward with F1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was looking too, and I'm looking at a picture right now in front of the Parisian hotel here, and they had huge crowds, yeah, gathered around this thing on Las Vegas Boulevard, and you were just like, oh my gosh, this thing looks so freaking cool to see. It just is a weird thing to see, like, a Mercedes going down the strip, and you're like, that's what's really going to be happening here. So
yeah,
there you
go. It's
really
cool.
And it's a good time to do it because they had that week between the Mexican Grand Prix and the Brazilian Grand Prix, which is where we're going now. So on to Brazil. Lewis Hamilton's home race, I guess, you know, is a dual citizen of both Great Britain.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Brazil's newest citizen.
Oh, yeah. But listen, it's the smartest move Brazil could have made. If you want to do this kind of thing, look, jump on it. And, Max Verstappen, you're already a Belgian. How many citizenships can you hold?
Yeah,
he's
Belgian. Like,
he's
German, right?
Is he really?
I thought he was born in Germany.
No, he's born in Belgium.
Okay, he's born in Belgium.
He's he's from Holland. Like, that's where,
yeah,
he's Dutch. Like,
yeah,
that's where his parents are both from. But I think he was born in Belgium.
Yeah.
That's why when they go to the Belgium Grand Prix, they're like, oh, this is his home race, I guess.
Like, not really, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know how many citizenships you can hold, but it'd be smart to start doling them out to some of these F1 drivers, you know, to suddenly get. I mean, it's awesome,
I mean,
too, because,
yeah, Danny Ric should be a U.S. citizen at this point.
He lives in California for nine months of the year. And, I, you know, props to him because he's one of the few who is like, I'll just pay my taxes. It's fine. Everybody else is like, I live in Monaco for the sake of accessibility to the services around Europe. You're like, get out of here. You don't pay any income taxes when you go there. So the Brazilian Grand Prix at Interlagos, what's the history of this track for people who don't know this track very well? Who does it play toward? Lewis Hamilton is like the second son of Brazil. Like, they love that guy there, you know, mm-hmm, which would be nice after a weekend of him getting booed in Mexico because of Checo's home race there. Brazil is a really, really good race for Lewis. He's done fantastic there historically. It's also been a place that's later on in the calendar usually, and it's been a decider of so many championships in the past. And it's a really, really – it's a cool – you know, it has obviously the Ayrton Senna, you know, kind of vibe to it, and it has that draw, obviously, of the Brazilian crowd. But what does Interlagos for F1 and on this calendar mean?
Yeah, for a long time, it was the last race of the season. And so that's where we were crowning the champion. And there's, like you said, there's been some really dramatic races there. I went back and watched the highlights of Lewis's first championship. I think it was 2009. And I remember watching that race live. It was coming down to either Felipe Massa or Lewis. And Massa, Brazilian, you know, homeboy, right. You know, hometown favorite. Mm-hmm. Started on pole in the Ferrari and led every single lap of that race, but Lewis had to finish fifth or better or something like that in order to take the championship. And there's just this really dramatic moment on the last lap that Felipe Massa crosses finish line, you know, wins the race, and Lewis at that point, when Massa crosses the finish line, Lewis is in like seventh or sixth or something. He's not going to win. He's going to lose by 1 point.
It's the famous when Ferrari's cheering
in
the...
Yeah, everybody in the garage in Ferrari's going in crazy because like we just won the championship, right? And then somehow Lewis gets past Timo Glock and there's like speculation that Timo let him by. Like he just in the very last corner, Lewis gets Timo and he wins the championship. So you have these two... I just remember sitting there watching the split screen of Mercedes and Ferrari both celebrating that they had won the championship at the same time. And then there's like somebody taps like the team boss on the shoulder in Ferrari and he stops and you just see it set in that they realize that they had lost
Felipe it. Felipe Massa's wife is like there and she's like, what? And it was really bad too because someone's going through and basically like, it's like the guy from Ferrari starts going through, starts like shoving people. He's like, no, he's like, it's wrong. Stop celebrating. He's like, we just got beat. And they point at the screen and they just go, huh? Like, what?
Yeah. So that, like, that's kind of my memory.
Has some cool
my core memory
there.
Around Interlagos. And then rain. Like,
yeah,
that's
lots
the other
of
thing is that, like, the rain comes and goes and it messes up people's strategy and people go off. You had Lewis, like, with a comeback win, I think last year. You had the year where he kind of, I think he hit Sergio, knocked Sergio out of the race right there at the end. And rain is in the forecast for this weekend too.
It's later than it usually is even, in it's like historically where it's been. And I guess they said November, it's like an insane amount of rain.
Rainy season.
Yeah. And so interested to see, and this is a sprint, race weekend as well. And so you've got, kind of some added bonus points in there as well as guys are able to earn. You know, the qualifying turns into that 100-kilometer race that they end up having on Saturday.
Yeah.
And that's your qualifying technically. You have qualifying that's normal that actually qualifies you for the sprint race, and the sprint race actually you can earn points in all the way up to eighth place, and then the actual race is decided – or the race start is decided by how that sprint race finishes up. With the points the way they are right now – what's interesting, because I look at kind of the standings and I go, all right, so here's what we have. I've got it here in front of me. Max Verstappen, of course, walks away with this thing, but you have 5 points that separate Sergio Perez and Charles Leclerc. And then you've got Russell, who's 40-ish points behind that. Lewis Hamilton, who is another 15 points behind that. And then Carlos Sainz is all but out of this thing, 4 points behind Lewis Hamilton. So is there any movement that really happens here? I mean, I think the question is going to be whether or not Checo can finish at second. That would be an amazing year for him. But then Max Verstappen, like, is it that important to him to get – I mean, he already has the most points in the history of any driver in a year.
Wins in a season.
Right, and most wins in a season. But he's quick to point out, too, like, we have way more races than they ever used to have back in the day. And the points that we dole out are a lot different, too. And so 416 points, great. It's record-setting, but also the amount of races that they have.
It's different.
What is the thing that you look forward to on a weekend like this? And I know that every race is singularly different and fun to watch in its own right, but what are you going to be watching this weekend in terms of, like, battles going on the track?
Yeah, I think the George, Lewis, Carlos is a fight that's going to be interesting to watch, and then obviously Sergio, Charles. And I think that those guys are still jockeying for position, especially Mercedes trying to leapfrog Ferrari in the constructor standings as well. And I like the sprint race, with rain in the forecast, I cannot recall us ever having a sprint race in the wet. I think they've all been dry races. And so
I wouldn't be able to recall either.
And, you know, they're short enough that these guys, they do the sprint race on one set of tires, like nobody's pitting.
Right.
And so if you get rain halfway through the race or something, like, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens when these guys are having to change tires during a sprint race, what that does. And, you know, that just the water and just increases the risk of an incident. And, you know, these guys really want to avoid, you know, damaging their cars, right, and kind of getting put to the back of the race and that or of the sprint, you know, finishing order. And then they are starting at the back for the race. And so it'll be interesting what people choose to do, especially if the water or if the rain comes. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm excited for the sprint race. I think there's still like a lot up in the air about the future of sprint races. There's going to be more next year. I think they said six sprint races next year. So F1's still trying to figure it out. I don't think we've really figured it out yet.
Well, they're trying to make Saturday more exciting, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the bottom line is I don't really love the point distribution either. I mean, it's essentially what – it's basically a count back from eight, I think, or something like that. So it's like eight all the way down to eighth place gets 1 point, I think, or whatever it is. Or maybe it's 10 and then all the way down to one. But either way, it's not like – I mean, if you finish sixth or if you finish, you know, eighth and you go, oh, 1 or 2 points in there, it doesn't really make that big of a difference. But I think that it does – there are going to be years that there are going to be some sprint races that make some decisive kind of moves in those – in the constructors and in the drivers' championship. I still yet to be seen for me because I think initially I was like, oh, man, it's an actual race. It's a 100-kilometer race. It's a third of the length of an actual race.
Right.
If we're doing more racing, it's going to be more exciting. But I don't know how the drivers feel about it because they're like, we're doing a race for 3 hours tomorrow anyway or 2 hours tomorrow anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know how much they love the sprint races either, but it's extra points for them.
So yeah, I haven't heard any kind of resounding support coming from the drivers for it. But as fans, like, yeah, I'm much, you know, more – likely going to tune in to watch the sprint race live than I am qualifying on a Saturday. And so I think for F1, they want to continue to find a way to work it out. I'd be curious to see if they came in with like an ultra soft tire or something that like burns out in 10 laps so that like it actually has to create a pit stop,
right.
You know, something like that where it mixes up the strategy, I think would be interesting to throw into the mix.
It's good. Like I'm glad that they actually look at it and go, what can we be more exciting with? We're going to have a bunch of new fans. We got to figure out how to make this thing more exciting. I think in the future, like, you don't want to have race. You don't want to have championships that end, you know, 5 weeks before the end of the season. That's really, really hard. It's hard to get people into it. And in American sports, that's what makes it so much – well, and in really any sport across the world, it's fun when it comes down to, you know, a tournament, a championship, a
– yeah, playoffs. You know,
if there's a playoff – I mean, they figured it out for NASCAR, right? They have
right.
A, they have a – you know, those standings that they do and you earn yourself into the championship. You saw how insane it was that they had that NASCAR race that the guy launched himself around.
Oh, man, my favorite moment of the year.
The track. I mean, and just and I watched every angle. I listened to every radio call. One of my favorite things about all that was, what was his name? Chastain. Was his
Ross Chastain,
Ross
yeah.
Chastain. He just goes, look, I'm just going to throw this thing into the wall, and it's the only way I'm going to be able to open up the accelerator all the way.
Yeah.
We'll see what goes on. And then he gets in. My favorite thing was watching these other drivers who just went, oh, man, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen, while they're in the car getting beat by it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, all the radio
like,
chatter.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, what?
They're all the
same. So I guess that does work.
The one just threw himself across the finish line. Just, I love what they call it by the name of their car. And the Southern accent just adds more to it.
Oh, it's the best.
The one just beat y'all. He just ran across that thing. It just sounds amazing.
Yeah,
like
you had Fernando Alonso retweeting that video saying this is the most exciting thing that's happened in racing in 2022. And I think he's right. Like, I mean, I worked in NASCAR for a number of years. My brother worked in it for a lot longer than I did. We, you know, we've never seen anything like that. And both him and I, our first reaction when we saw the video independently was, I thought it was in like fast forward. I thought they had sped the video up. And I'm like, why'd they speed the video up? That's weird. And then I saw the cars on the inside going the normal speed. And I'm like, no way that worked. No way that, because I intuitively would have thought he would have broken a right front suspension arm. Like he would have hit the crossover gate. Like right there in turn four, there's a gate that opens. We're talking about Martinsville. And Martinsville is a short track. It's shaped like a paperclip. It's low banking. But in turn four, there's like a gate that opens for you to be able to cross from the outside of the track to the inside of the track. And that crossover gate is like a weak point. And if a car hits right there, it can T-bone into the cement wall.
Yeah.
This is really dangerous. And so that's probably why no one's ever tried that, what he did, which was just ride along the wall
and
around the top.
And you couldn't do it on one of the really high banking tracks
either. I don't think it would be as advantageous. I think there's a lot of tracks where just you wouldn't get the speed differential like you do there.
Well, I guess it shows you too, like in those races, like those guys, how active their braking is, like through normal corners going into these things, because when he's just open all the way up, and of course, you couldn't sustain anything but the quarter of a lap that he did.
No, you got one shot at that. Like, yeah, after that, like, he wouldn't make it through the next corner.
Right.
So it's like, it's a one and done thing. And he had, you know, he tried it and it worked. And It was incredible. It was really cool to watch.
But is there some version of that? I mean, listen, that's how qualifying works on a weekly basis, right? You earn yourself into that next level, earn yourself into the next level. Is there a way that F1 could take advantage of the of an idea of a playoff? That's what we're used to. We're used to a tournament style of everything to determine our champions.
Yeah.
Whether it's a regular set of playoffs with a final at the end of it, that's how everything ends. And I think that that's how NASCAR is trying to figure out, like, hey, we got to kind of go that direction. Otherwise, we're going to have champions that end in the middle of the season already champions. No one is going to give a crap how this thing ends.
Yeah. NASCAR went from what kind of F1 has right now, where it's just the accumulation of points over an entire season, to what's called the Chase format in 2004. And they made that switch after like a huge consulting project with McKinsey, I think it was. And it was basically like, how do we fabricate a playoff or like create a playoff atmosphere? And there was a lot of pushback, I think, from, you know, the kind of old-time fans originally, like, oh, this is, you know, seems kind of fake. This isn't real racing. But, man, it created some really exciting finishes, one of which I was on the receiving end of, like, not being the, like it sucked. Like, 2011, I'm working at Ford and Roush Racing. Carl Edwards is leading the so we have the chase. Carl Edwards leading the championship. Tony Stewart is right on our tail. And we finish, Tony finishes first and Carl finishes second. And we lose the championship by a tiebreaker. And, like, I, like, cried myself to sleep that night. I was like, you can't, you know, be serious. So, yeah, it creates a ton of drama, and it's been really exciting. So I think it's been a net positive for NASCAR. So, I mean, you saw it last week, like, or 2 weeks ago when Ross Chastain does that move in order to make the transfer spot to race in the championship race. He doesn't do that if it's, the old point system, right?
Well, and even in golf, which is a – it's a bunch of individuals, right, fighting for a weekly pot, you know? Mm-hmm. But they had to figure something else. So they go, look, we're going to do these FedEx. We're going to do the FedEx, standings where basically the winner of these most important tournaments, it's going to be you're going to win $13 million on top of these other pots over here. So essentially you have to make those playoffs. You have to get into those things. And even golf had to say, how can we make this more exciting? F1's got to figure out how to make it more exciting. Yeah.
I'll be surprised if they don't do some sort of change. I think Liberty Media looks at this year and they're like, kind of sucks that Max ran away with it at the very end.
But right, because last year you had a bunch of people jump in not knowing that this is their first year. It doesn't go down to the last lap of the last race ever.
Yeah.
So that's it would be exciting if it did.
And it would be exciting if it did, but it'd even be better if it was coming down to the second to the last race or something.
Right.
And we have the summer break already built in August. So you could run normal season up through the summer break, come back from the summer break. Okay, playoffs have started. There's been some sort of reset of the points in a seeding based on how you perform during the regular season. And then it's a 10-race sprint to the end that kind of just tightens everybody up. I think that would be a great thing for F1 to do. And I don't know. We'll see if the old-timers at F1 could stomach that.
The old-timers. What's the deal with the – is Mick Schumacher going to be racing in F1 next year?
I don't think so.
What on earth? How does that work?
I don't know. But maybe he's back with Audi. So rumor today is that it's almost a done deal with Nico Hülkenberg to go to Haas, which is just incredible that he's going to be teammates with
Kevin Magnussen.
With Magnussen, right? That's going to be a dream made in Netflix heaven,
Sure.
But then Mick, you're like, good grief. Like, the kid's awesome. He's not a bad driver. Like, he definitely deserves to be on the grid.
Nico Hülkenberg.
How does the sponsor not want him?
Right. Nico Hülkenberg is known as a guy who kind of doesn't really get it done, has had his shot, and has always been at the bottom third of the grid.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't know what Haas and Steiner are thinking, but there's just a lot of rumors around with Audi coming in and taking that ownership position in Sauber. And Alfa Romeo leaving in a year or two.
Yeah.
And then they'll just be Sauber for a couple of years. And then Audi, they'll be the Audi factory team in 2026. That Audi wants two German drivers. So everyone's fever dream is that Mick and Sebastian Vettel comes out of retirement.
Seb, you said it this week that he was, who knows what's going to happen. Never say never.
Yeah.
It's interesting because he also was like, I'm doing it my way. I'm walking away from this thing. And then he went to... you can't rule out everything. Yeah, it's like weird.
Yeah, you can't help but see that with the timing of the Audi announcement that you're like, Audi comes in and says they want German drivers. They probably wave a big check in front of Seabass's face, and he's like, "All right, well, maybe I'll come back in a few years."
Somebody picked up a video of Seb in the airport in Chile, making a connection just on a regular commercial flight.
Oh my gosh.
He looks like a homeless person. He does. Yeah. He looked like a European backpacker.
Yeah.
Like he's just like a hoodie and like some headphones and like a way too big for him backpack.
Yeah.
And these are guys who are slide of size anyway. And somebody picks him up and they see him across and he's like sitting in what looks like almost like a first class lounge kind of area, but he's just by himself.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there with his headphones on and they call his flight out and he goes and he boards. And I thought, this is Seb. And I guess maybe he's trying to do the responsible thing because he's been very critical of the amount of travel that they do in these private jets, and how bad it is for the environment. And he was like, yeah, look, if we're going to really preach, practice what we preach, we're not going to all be on these.
I could also see that tied with 2026 and the new regulations with the sustainable fuels and more efficient cars that maybe with his own personal values around climate change that he could be like, oh, I'm going to come back to the sport when we're more sustainable.
Yeah. All right. That's another week in the books here for us, Dan, for our Mode Push podcast. We're going to be back again breaking down Interlagos this weekend, how this thing shakes up. I'm interested to see how it does become an interesting race, what the side stories are. So we'll bring you that breakdown, and that episode will drop before your week of next week. So, Dan, thanks for coming up, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We're going to take the break here, and we'll be back again for another edition and another episode of Mode Push, the American view of F1, KSL Sports, KSL Podcasts. We'll be back again.